All right. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Keeling's Corner. Mikey's not with us again today. Hopefully after, you know, the holiday happens and everything is back to normal here at the studio, Mikey will be back with us and we'll be able to give you, you know, Mikey's opinion, my opinion. Sometimes we differ, sometimes we agree. But that's what we're here to bring you, some entertainment. So today we're going to talk, well, not we. Today I'm going to talk about, we're going to break down the NFL, MLB, and NBA, kind of like what we did last week. We're going to talk a little bit of Juan Soto, as we're hearing that five teams have made offers. And then we're going to talk, well, since the last time this came to you Saturday morning, the Nets went on the West Coast, and they beat the Kings, and they beat the Warriors, so that's not good for Net fans. And as I predicted, the Steelers were going to lose on Thursday night. I told everybody I didn't have, you know, the greatest feeling about that game. Granted, it was like a blizzard. It was Winter Wonderland out there in Cleveland, so... certainly was an entertaining game if you're not a Steeler fan. but yeah, we're going to break a little bit of that down. We're going to talk Knicks' big win last night in Denver against the Nuggets. Maybe talk and discuss a little bit of Jamal Murray's comments. Yeah, they were a little interesting. If you didn't hear what he said, I'll bring that to you a little bit later in the show. But yeah, it was certainly very interesting. So yeah, we're going to break all that down. But to start off this episode, we are going to be talking about Juan Soto. Where is he going to go? How much money is he going to get? And is he worth what he thinks he's worth? I'll tell you what, it's very rare that you see a player like Juan Soto become a free agent at his age. He's only 26 years old, and he's a top three hitter in baseball, definitely a top five hitter in baseball. The guy's won a World Series already. He's a stud, okay? He's got one of the best eyes, you know, we have ever seen in baseball. But is he worth $700 million, his asking price? I'm going to say no, he's not worth $700 million. Is he worth $500 million? Absolutely. But worth $700 million? I don't think so. And quite frankly, Juan Soto, if you're listening, which you're probably not, but if you are, why on earth do you want such a long contract? You're 26 years old and the market is reshaping year after year after year. Take a six-year deal and then get paid again when you're 32. Odds are the market's going to be up higher. Or what you should do is sign a 10-year deal with an opt-out after five, so this way you can, you know, evaluate where the market is, what players are getting, and who knows, you might make a lot more money. I mean, I certainly don't think anybody expects your production to fall off. I mean, you're not that great of a right fielder, okay? Even though he was a Gold Glove finalist, everybody can clearly see that Juan Soto is not the greatest right fielder in you know, Major League Baseball. You know, baseball is a two-way sport. You know, you got to be able to hit and you got to be able to field, and Soto is below average at fielding, and he's certainly above average at hitting. You know, that's undeniable. So we're hearing, according to John Morsi, that five teams have offered Juan Soto a contract. Those teams being the New York Yankees, of course, the New York Mets, as everyone expected, the Los Angeles Dodgers, which shouldn't come as a surprise as they find a way to offer everybody a contract, the Boston Red Sox, and the Toronto Blue Jays. Apparently, they all have submitted offers for Juan Soto, and... is there really any, you know, surprises there? Oh, I'm sorry, in the Boston Red Sox. I don't know if I said them already. But the only surprise there to me is the Boston Red Sox. I did not expect them to be aggressive in this market for Juan Soto. They traded Mookie Betts instead of paying him. He played the same position as Juan Soto. So them being in on this is a little eye-opening. If you put Soto and Devers in the same lineup, they're going to be great. I said that last week. They're going to be very, very formidable. I mean... listen, Soto, this isn't going to end, you know, just because Soto got one round of offers. This is going to go multiple rounds. Soto is expected to sign somewhere between December 9th and the 12th or December 7th and December 12th when the winter meetings start and end. I can't see Soto going for more than $550 at 10 years. If any team is going to give him more than that, it's going to be the Mets because they'll wind up getting into a bidding war, and we know Cohen is going to go, you know, above and beyond in his... pursue of Juan Soto and trying to bring the Mets, quite frankly, a championship that, you know, they haven't gotten in a very long time, a World Series. So they also haven't been there since 2015. So, you know, we're approaching a decade since the last time the Mets were there. And, you know, 1986 was the last time they won. So it's going to be interesting to see where the Mets turn in the offseason. If they don't get Juan Soto, that's certainly going to be very interesting. Do they look... I mean, I don't even know. Like, I feel like it's Soto or nothing for them. Like, I mean, pitchers, Corbin Burnes, Blake Snell, Max Fried. if Max Fried would, you know, leave Atlanta and join the rival, the Mets. Who knows? But it'll be very interesting to see where the Mets turn, as it feels like the Mets need Soto a lot more than the Yankees do in terms of there's no backup plan for the Mets. At least that's what it feels like. You know, if the Yankees don't get Soto, they turn to Bregman, they turn to Christian Walker, you know, guys who they should be looking at regardless of if they have Juan Soto or not. They focus on adding a starter. They focus on adding Tanner Scott, maybe trading for Carlos Estevez, maybe, you know, adding one of those pieces. And quite frankly, the Yankees, if they are serious about winning a championship, as we saw, the Yankees are a very flawed team, okay? We saw it in the World Series, okay? It wasn't just obvious to their fans. It was obvious to the opposing team. They're a flawed team. So they need to address, you know, other needs, not just Juan Soto. So regardless of where Soto winds up, if he's a Yankee or not, the Yankees have to look at first and third base. They just have to. They have to add to the bullpen. Odds are Clay Holmes isn't coming back, so the Yankees are going to be, I mean, it's not that Clay Holmes was any good, you know, but he was kind of a reliable arm, if you want to say that, and I say that with hesitation because he was great for the first, you know, 2.5 months of the year, and then he really faltered, and he winded up losing the closer role. Luke Weaver winded up taking over that job, you know, in the home stretch of the season, and Luke Weaver was great in the playoffs, but I have a little hesitation on if Luke Weaver is going to be, you know, that guy next year for the Yankees. You know, he wasn't a great starter, okay? He became a reliever, and, you know, he found something, and was that a temporary fix for Luke Weaver in his career, or is that a permanent fix? Is Weaver just going to, you know, be a lockdown reliever now? Who knows? No one knows the answer to that question, because in baseball, in the MLB, year after year after year, these relievers, unless you're a top-flight reliever like Chapman was for years or Kimbrel was for years, and I'm not even going to go as far back as, you know, Mariano, but, like, if, you know, Iglesias, like, even a guy like Iglesias, there's hiccups along the way. But relievers in Major League Baseball, they change from year to year to year. And quite frankly, paying a reliever, unless he has a track record of 5 or 6 consecutive years of him being absolutely dominant in a closer role on a high, you know, in high leverage positions on a team that's good, you can't pay a reliever. Like Tanner Scott, no one knows if Tanner Scott's going to be good. He pitched in Miami, okay, and then he went to the Padres, okay, and he was okay for the Padres. You know, numbers and performance are two completely different things, especially when it comes to relievers. You could be a dominant reliever, get blown up in one outing, and have your numbers, you know, be completely, you know, screwed. You could have a 3.9 ERA, you know, and all of your, you know, you can give 6 runs in one outing, not getting out, you know, and your ERA is ballooned and you're spending, you know, the entire year trying to bring it back down. So, you know, getting back to, you know, the Yankees and the Mets and what they should do. Yeah, I'm not really too sure where the Mets are going to go, but I know where the Yankees are going to go if they don't get Juan Soto. So hopefully we have a little bit more clarification by the next time, you know, I talk to you guys, and the next time there's another episode, and hopefully we just know where he's going one way or another, because you don't want to go through this whole process of where it drags out, and the guys don't sign, and you wind up missing out, and it's just a long, grueling process. Soto, make a decision. You know where you're going to be. You know who's going to give you the money. Just make the decision, man. I mean, come on. Let's cut all the in-between out, all right? Go where you want to be and to who's going to give you the money. Whether it's $550 million or $500 million, it doesn't really make a difference, all right? So hopefully we know some type more of information by the next time we come to you next week. All right. So as I mentioned in the opening, the Brooklyn Nets went on a West Coast trip, and they decided that they were going to beat Sacramento Kings, and they decided that they were going to beat Golden State Warriors in back-to-back games on back-to-back nights. Now, anybody, if you just say, oh, hey, my team went on the West Coast and they beat two of the top teams and supposed to be top teams in the Western Conference, any other fan base would say, wow, that's really great. But for the five of us that are out there, deep down inside, I am a little happy about the back-to-back, you know, wins, you know, because the team's showing fight. And Jordy Fernandez, he could be a great coach. Who knows? I mean, the only difference between, you know, this team this year and last year, quite frankly, is the coaching. You know, we lost Bridges, okay. But, you know, it's very interesting to see the Nets performing better this year than they did last year, considering the talent. But, you know, sometimes when you get a bunch of hungry guys together on one team and you put them out on the floor, they put it together and, you know, they become a lot more formidable than, you know, people would think. It's not like the Nets have, you know, no talent guys. They have no name guys. I mean, you watch the guys on the floor. They're pretty talented, okay? They're going to put it together. They want to win. These guys that are playing for the Nets right now, they're playing for their careers, okay? Like Zaire Williams or Keon Johnson, you know, Jalen Wilson just got a 3-year contract, you know, but the Nets were shorthanded last night. They were without Claxton. They were without Simmons. And, you know, they started Wilson, Cam Johnson, Zaire Williams, Dennis Schroeder, and Cam Thomas with Keon Johnson, Shake Milton coming off the bench. Tyrese Martin came off the bench. Trenton Watford, and the Nets finally got back, came off the bench. And the Nets were without Dorian Finney-Smith. So the Nets were without, you know, potentially three starters, and they beat a top team in the Western Conference, you know, in the second half of a back-to-back. That's pretty impressive. Hopefully, you know, like I said, as a Nets fan, you want Cooper Flagg, you want Ace Bailey, you want Harper, but it's just frustrating because you don't know what you're going to do with those draft picks. You don't know if you're going to go get a star or, you know, make all of those picks and see what happens. So it's a frustrating situation to be in as a Nets fan, and you knew it was going to happen because it happens to the Nets all the time. They get three stars, something happens, and they can't all play together, or there's injuries or something like that, and they wind up having to blow it up, and they don't even get to a conference finals. So now, looking at it, can anyone be surprised that there's three top prospects in this upcoming draft that on any given year would be the number one overall pick in the draft that could be franchise-changing prospects? The Nets have their first-round draft pick. They have four first-round draft picks in this upcoming draft, and the Nets are overperforming. The Nets are going to make a playing game if they don't shake things up. You know, I would expect by the time the trade deadline comes, Cam Johnson's gone, Cam Thomas might be gone, Dennis Schroeder's definitely gone, Dorian Finney-Smith is definitely gone. You know, I would just imagine that no one is safe on the Nets roster, not even Claxton. So it'll be very interesting to see, you know, how long the Nets hold on to these guys for, and if they do decide to hold on to them, do they trade draft picks and try and get a superstar? Does Giannis become available? This is a good time to mention what's going on in Denver. Jamal Murray came out, you know, he was talking to the media last night, and he said that, you know, some guys have lives outside of basketball, which, quite frankly, that's crap. That really is. You make most of the guys on the team make anywhere from $10 to $30 million a night, a year, okay? You're in season. This is your job, okay? This isn't the off season, okay? You're in season. The regular person, you know, can't just say, oh, you know what? I have a life outside of my job. You know what? I can afford to not get paid this week. You know, I'm just going to, you know, take the week off. I'm going to go to L.A., as Jamal Murray said, that some guys lived in L.A., you know, so they stayed the night in L.A. All right. You're in season. This is your job, okay? You're a professional. Do your job. Do your job when you're supposed to do it, okay, and how you're supposed to do it. No one else in the world gets paid $30 million a year to play a basketball game or to play a game in general besides for the other major league sports, okay? Go out there and play. Go out there, play, and then go home. It's that simple. In the offseason, absolutely. You do have a life outside of basketball. No one's saying you don't. Okay, but in the offseason is the time to be saying that, not, you know, 18 games into the season. And I think Jamal Murray might just be a little bit frustrated with his play. Could he have been calling out people on his team? Who knows? That's a little... Who knows? It's a tricky situation to try and dissect because you don't really know what's going on the inside, okay? One thing I know is that Jokic busts his, you know, he busts his butt every night, all right? Jokic is having, up until this point, the best season numbers-wise of his career, okay? Game in, game out, okay? Jokic performs. That's him, you know, that's what Jokic is going to be. The question is, does Jokic get fed up with everything else that's going on the team? You know, does Jokic eventually ask out? I'm not saying he's going to. I'm not saying that's even it's even a thought right now in his mind. But it's certainly a possibility. Bet you no one ever thought Giannis would want to ask out. And there's been rumors swirling around about him. Granted, Milwaukee has turned it around a little bit. Okay, but those rumors are not going to go away. The Bucks lose four in a row. Those rumors are going to come right back up. And who knows what's going to happen? It probably won't happen during the season. It'll probably happen during an off-season trade. But who knows? The point is, if you're the Nets, you have a ton of draft picks, and you never know when that next star is going to become disgruntled and want out. So keep doing what you're doing, Brooklyn. All right, but just remember, if you miss out on one of those top three prospects to be a playing team and lose in the playing game, that's going to be a very, very tough bone to bite on when it's all said and done. As for the Knicks, Karl-Anthony Towns certainly looks pretty good. He's definitely scoring a lot of points. You know, he's a little injury prone. You know, he doesn't play every game. He's been battling a knee injury. You know, but the Knicks, had a very bad loss to the Jazz, and then, you know, they blew out the Nuggets last night. But the Nuggets are clearly a disgruntled team right now. No one knows what's going on with them. They let a Luka Doncic-less team in Dallas come in and, you know, manhandle them. Then they came back and made it close, and then they pulled away, you know, in the final seconds. Dallas did. So, yeah, I mean, the Knicks are going to be I don't think the Knicks are title contenders unless they make another trade. And I do think that I think the Knicks ceiling is the second round of the playoffs. That's just the way I see it. You know, that's not, you know, for any which reason. They played the Nets in a very close game. You know, they lost. They had a very bad loss to the Jazz. They lost to the Bulls. You know, they have a lot of bad losses on their schedule. You know, they got blown out by the Rockets. They barely beat the Hawks. They barely hung around with the Hawks is what I meant to say. Yeah, but they're sitting at 10-7, so they're right in the thick of it. You know, the NBA is wide open right now. You know, the top team clearly is Boston. Cleveland, yeah, they're 17-1. They lost to Boston in Boston, which was expected. Cleveland's a good basketball team, but I don't think they're going to, you know, go on and break any type of historic records for wins in a season or anything like that. They're just a good basketball team. You know, they're going to wind up probably being the 2 or 3 seed in the Eastern Conference, which is nothing to snub at. I mean, they're going to get home court in the first round, probably the second round as well. And, you know, Donovan Mitchell's on a mission. Donovan Mitchell came back after last year and everything that happened. You know, people thought that he might be, you know, on the move potentially to the Nets or potentially to the Knicks again. And Donovan Mitchell put his head down. He got to work. And he's leading right now the best team in basketball, who I don't think will wind up being the best team in basketball, but he's leading them to a very impressive season. Yeah, so that's going to, you know, wrap up basketball for now. Now I want to get on to the NFL. And the NFL, wow, what a witching hour it was, as they would say on Red Zone. Scott Hansen, shout out to you. The witching hour was absolutely incredible on Sunday. Okay, you had Chicago trying to recover onside kicks and recovering them, then getting the ball in overtime. They were down by 11. They were down by 11 or something like that with about 35 seconds to go. They scored a touchdown, got the 2-point conversion, and then got the onside kick, kicked the field goal to tie it. You had Dallas. The Dallas game was incredible. Okay, you had Washington score a touchdown from about 80 yards away. Okay, with less than 30 seconds left on one play, Jaden Daniels found Terry McLaurin down the sideline, and he broke free. Okay, and then he missed the extra point to tie the game. He missed the extra point to tie the game. That's crazy. I mean, that is a game-changing game for Washington. A season-changing game for Washington. I mean, that's an absolutely brutal loss. It's a brutal way to lose a game. Okay, but before that even happened, okay, let's take you back to the 3-minute mark in the game. Okay, Daniels just threw a touchdown to Zach Ertz to pull Washington to within 3. Okay. Next thing you know, it's a pretty good kickoff. Okay. The ball's kicked. Seibert kicks it about probably 64 yards or 65 yards, whatever it was. And the fastest guy in the NFL, Turpin, he bobbles it. And, everyone who watches it will be like, oh, wow, that's a great kick, that's a great kick. And all of a sudden, Kevontae Turpin puts on a video game-like spin move. And he completely left every Washington defender in the dust. And it felt like all the hope of of Washington pulling off this comeback was completely drained. And then all of a sudden, Daniels found McLaurin for an 86-yard touchdown, where then Seibert missed the extra point. That was crazy. You had the Carolina Panthers in Carolina have Kansas City on the brink of the biggest upset of the football season, okay? Bryce Young, who had the best game of his career, quite frankly, granted who they were playing and all of that, okay? Young was 21-35 for 263 yards, a touchdown, 0 interceptions, okay? And he had 20 rushing yards. And he led the game-tying drive, getting the 2-point conversion, okay? And the Panther defense just couldn't stop Patrick Mahomes, you know, and hold them off a field goal, you know, in the final, you know, 2 minutes of the game to give Bryce Young the ball back to see what he could do. No one expected, you know, Patrick Mahomes to not get into field goal range and at least give his kicker a chance. So that was pretty amazing. And then you had the Tennessee Titans upset Houston in Houston, Okay, that was pretty crazy, where Fairbairn, who is, you know, is almost as automatic as they get, misses a 27-yard field goal to tie the game. Okay, it was just crazy, okay? That was one of the funnest witching hours in the NFL in a very long time. And quite frankly, the game that stuck out to me the most on Sunday might have been the Eagles and the Rams. Because Saquon Barkley, the ex-Giant, came out and had over 300 total yards of offense, 200-plus yards rushing, okay? And he completely destroyed the Rams' defense in L.A. The Rams are a bad football team right now. Their defense absolutely stinks. They should have traded Cooper Kupp. They should have blown it up, okay? They should have traded Stafford. They should have kept Puka Nacua. They should have taken a quarterback in this year's draft with whatever draft capital they would have gotten back from trading Stafford and Cooper Kupp. And that's where they should have went because they were embarrassed on Sunday Night Football. Absolutely embarrassed, losing 37-20 at home. Jalen Hurts only threw for 179 yards. Saquon Barkley had 255 rushing yards and two touchdowns, adding 47 receiving yards. It was just, quite frankly, it was just a Saquon Barkley domination game. Cooper Kupp was invisible until the last drive. At least that's what it felt like. Puka Nacua put together another amazing game, 9 for 117. He was just missing a touchdown. And now we're going to head to Monday night, where the Ravens were down 10-0 early in the Harbaugh game to the Chargers in L.A. And everyone thought, huh, maybe the Chargers are going to do this. Maybe the Chargers are going to beat Baltimore. Well, I got news for you. The season in the AFC changed, not only for the Ravens, not only for the Chargers, not only for the Steelers, okay? Not quite frankly, not only for the Bengals, but for Houston. Yeah, I mean, it changed for everybody on one play. It was a 4th-and-1 inside their own 20-yard line in the first half with about 2 minutes to go. And Harbaugh decided that he was going to go for it. And he got it. And they winded up going down Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson winded up finding Rashad Bateman for a 40-yard touchdown with 32 seconds to go in the half to give them the lead instead of the Chargers getting the ball back and potentially going up by, you know, 6 or 2 scores. That's when the season changed. That's when the season changed for a lot of teams. And it was just complete domination for Derrick Henry, Lamar Jackson, and the Baltimore offense from there on out. Now, looking at the standings here, the Chiefs have the number one seed in the AFC. The Bills have the number 2. The Steelers number 3. And the Texans are number 4. And now those are the 4 division winners. Baltimore's not going away anywhere from the division. Right now, if the season were to end today, Steelers would host L.A. Buffalo would host the Broncos. And Houston would host the Ravens. I don't expect that to stay like that. I expect a couple of things to change. Last week, I mentioned that it felt like nobody in the NFC would be able to beat Detroit. Well, I got news for you. Philly's definitely, you know, got to be considered now with Saquon Barkley clearly changing that offense from what it was last year. The Giants are just a joke. They got embarrassed against the Buccaneers, and an even bigger embarrassment was letting Saquon Barkley go and not giving him the money that he wants because your franchise is completely set back now, and you have to hope that you hit on your rookie quarterback this year. Seattle is sitting at the 3 seed, and Atlanta is sitting at the 4 seed, but there's a couple of good teams out there, and the wild card round is going to be very, very fun in the NFC. The Packers, the Vikings, and the Commanders are all wild card teams, and quite frankly, you could say all 3 of those teams are better than Seattle and Atlanta, who are the other 2 division-winning teams, so those games are going to be very, very fun to watch, you know, if it stays like that. But all right, we're running out of time here, so you know what time it is. It's time now to make your NFL picks. Last week, I think we had a pretty solid week. I don't remember off the top of my head, but I think it was pretty solid. I'm going to try and get a perfect slate this week, starting with 3 Thanksgiving games. So here it is, your NFL week picks. CJ's giving it out right here, right now. If you want a nice Thanksgiving parlay, okay, you're going to take the Bears plus 10.5 coming off of that awful loss. Okay, I think Caleb Williams stinks, but I think they might show up at 12:30 on Thanksgiving and eat some turkey legs and maybe even celebrate. Detroit's going to win the game, but the Bears are going to keep it close. All right, moving on. The second game on Thanksgiving. Again, this will be coming to you after, so let's see if I can predict the future. The Giants play the Cowboys. It's a 3.5 spread. Okay, I'm going to take the Cowboys. I think the Cowboys cover the spread, and I think they win the game. And now you got the Miami Dolphins and the Green Bay Packers. Now, this is where it gets tricky because we know how Tua plays in cold weather. He does not play very well. The Dolphins are on life support right now. Their season's on life support. We've seen them go to cold weather games like in Buffalo when their season was on life support or seeding was on, you know, when seeding was in the balance, and we've seen them fail again. I expect them to fail once more. Taking the Green Bay Packers, -3.5. Green Bay Packers are going to win the game. That's your Thanksgiving parlay. Bears +10.5. Dallas minus, buy it down to 2.5. Dallas -2.5, and the Packers -3.5. There it is. If you want to win some money on Turkey Day, play that parlay. All right, moving on to Friday. There's a Black Friday game once again this year. It's the Raiders versus the Chiefs. This is a snooze fest. No Minshew magic as he broke his collarbone this past weekend. It's expected to be Aiden O'Connell. The spread is 12.5. The Chiefs are going to win this game. The Chiefs will probably cover. All right. Moving on to Sunday. You got the Steelers versus the Bengals. Bengals -3 at home. Wow, the Steelers are dogs. All right. Steelers are going to go into Cincinnati and win this one. There's a lot of talking going on between the Steelers and Cincy right now. There's a lot of talking going on between the Steelers and a lot of teams right now. Steelers are going to show up. Russell Wilson is going to show up in Cincinnati. Pittsburgh gets it done. All right. We got Houston versus the Jaguars. Houston's going into Jacksonville. I'm going to say Houston wins. Chargers, Falcons. Spread is 2. It's in Atlanta. I'm taking Atlanta. Give me the Falcons. I like the Falcons in that one. The Titans versus the Commanders. Commanders -5.5. I think the Commanders do wind up blowing them out in this game. I think everyone's going to be high on the Titans and low on the Commanders from what, you know, transpired this past weekend in both of their respective games. I am expecting the public to be on Tennessee +5.5. I will roll with the Commanders -5.5. All right. Cardinals and Minnesota. Arizona going to Minnesota. Minnesota -3.5. The Cardinals did not look very good in Seattle last week. I expect a little bit of a bounce back game from Kyler Murray and the boys over there. Maybe to get Marvin Harrison a little bit more involved. I'm going to say the Cardinals go into Minnesota and they beat Minnesota, who was on the brink of, you know, a bad loss last week to the Bears, quite frankly, in Chicago. So moving on, I'm going to slow the pace down here a little bit. We got New England versus Indianapolis. New England has looked, you know, Drake May looks pretty good, but other than that, they've been pretty much, you know, a walkover team this year. It's a pretty low spread. Indianapolis -2.5, considering they just gave, you know, Detroit a little bit of a, you know, a tougher matchup. You know, it was a tough game. It wasn't a walk, you know. It's not like the Lions, you know, ran all over them and walked all over them, and it was a blowout. I think they're begging you to take the Colts, so I'm going to take the Patriots at home. I think that spread at 2.5, they're begging you to take the Colts, so I'm going to take the Patriots. Seattle versus the Jets. Jeez, in New York, this is another one where it feels like they're begging you to take Seattle at only 2. The spread's only 2. How is this spread only 2? Is Aaron Rodgers just getting, you know, respect right now? Is he still getting respect like teams like Notre Dame and Penn State do? I'm gonna think he is. You know, I'm going to take Seattle just because I think the Jets are a dumpster fire right now, even though I think they're begging you to take Seattle. I'm going to take him. You got the Rams going to New Orleans. The Rams, once again, our favorite going to New Orleans. I like the Rams this week, even though I think they're a bad football team. I think New Orleans is even worse. I think the Rams offense is better, which will evidently prevail in the final, you know, minutes of the game. The Buccaneers and the Panthers. I'm going to take the Buccaneers. I think the Bucs blow them out. Eagles, Ravens. I think that I'm hoping the Eagles win, but I think in Baltimore, I think the Ravens are going to get the job done. And then the 49ers and the Bills on Sunday Night Football. Spread is 7. Don't know if Purdy's playing. Don't know who's going to be healthy for them. I think Buffalo rolls. So that's who I'm going to go with. The final game of the week, Cleveland goes to Denver. I'm going to say Bo Nix keeps the ball rolling, and they pull out a pretty dominating win. Actually, I would think. I think a lot of people are going to be on Cleveland after what happened, you know, in the Steelers game last Thursday night. Everyone was watching. So I think a lot of people are going to be on Cleveland. I'm going to roll with the Broncos. All right, everybody, there it is. There's my picks. Hopefully you roll with them. Hopefully you play that Thanksgiving parlay. Hopefully you eat a lot of turkey, you know, and stuff your mouth with some pretty good food. And enjoy some football. I hear the weather's not going to be that good on Thanksgiving, so hopefully, you know, everybody has safe travels and everything like that. But yeah, hopefully everyone has a great holiday, and hopefully Mikey's back with us next week, and hopefully we know a little bit more about where Juan Soto's going. All right, everybody. Thank you all for listening. Keelings Corner out. See you next week.